welcome to the Mad Trio Podcast. This week we have the California Pariah, Jonathan Sharkey, James the Fat Man Stevens,
hello,
and Ryan, don't ask, don't tell, Preston.
I think you've used that one a couple times.
I have. It's kind of the default, really. Because you never know what you don't ask, you know.
Well, if you don't ask, he won't tell you.
Exactly.
If you don't ask, I won't tell.
Yeah. So it's kind of an evil cycle. So I sent this this image
exactly
to...
bullshit. If you ask, even if you don't ask, I'll tell.
So I sent this image to you guys via text message, and it's a bunch of famous TV cars. You have the Dukes of Hazzard, the Back to the Future car, Ecto-1, A-Team van, Miami Vice, Testarossa. You had the Magnum PI Ferrari or Knight Rider. Out of all these vehicles, if somebody would just hand you the keys, which one would you like?
I think I'd go with the Ghostbusters.
And I guess I should say, since all of these... since all of these are TV or movie vehicles, I'd say whatever they do in the movie or the TV show, they should, in theory, do when they hand you the keys.
Oh, okay.
I agree with that. That
still might be Ghostbusters.
Yeah. I don't think I'd go with Kit.
Siren.
Yeah.
It might. I was originally when
I thought. I'm not trying to start a relationship with my car, you know. Well, maybe the DeLorean, just because, you know, fuck with history. And all those people are like, oh, you're going to break the timeline. Who gives a shit? New timeline, fucker.
The only problem with a Kit, that if you actually watch a show, that fucker required a lot of maintenance. Is he going to come with that giant?
Yeah, true.
Is he going to come with that giant 18-wheeler?
Oh, yeah.
You know, because he did, you know, and also, is it going to come with that mechanic?
Wasn't there a manual at some point in the show?
Probably.
I think I remember a manual that was like the LA phone book.
Yeah, I vaguely, it's probably in the first couple of episodes.
I don't remember. I remember them in one episode, they busted out a manual for something to fix it. I just remember looking at that thing. I'm like, God damn, who read that thing?
I actually have to agree. I think Ecto-1, Back to the Future car, eh. I mean, I actually have always been a big fan of DeLorean Motor Corporation, but Ecto-1 would be pretty badass.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, really just for the siren.
Yep.
Yeah,
I would blast that siren everywhere.
So there's
would hate me.
So there's a YouTube video.
I love it.
Of them restoring the original Ecto-1. I forgot what it's called, and it was for one of the movies. I think it was they brought in Dan Aykroyd, and so they were restoring all the bibbles and bobbles up top of on the top of the car. And Dan Aykroyd was saying what they would have done in real life, because apparently Dan Aykroyd thought all of, you know, about what it would do, which I actually thought was badass. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if part of that's because he's autistic.
Yeah, it could be.
So it's one of those things that if it's in his wheelhouse, I have no doubt he thought about it, because he's really big into, was it spiritualism? Mm. It's the shit that
he's into all kinds of shit. But one of those things is actually automobile. You know, he's a big car nut.
That I've never heard.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Love cars. Love like cars like that. You know, like these old big giant boat cars. You know, ones that you wouldn't expect car people to like.
So I wonder if he's like Jay Leno. Jay Leno, half the reason he's bought some of his car, because I've watched his YouTube show, not this MSNBC show, but he's always been into if it has a story, he really digs the story.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So.
I think Dan Aykroyd got like old souped up station wagons and shit.
Yeah,
like the family truckster.
yeah, but with like a 454, you know.
Dude, I would totally do that. Get a family truckster, but get 1,000 horsepower, like just pavement pounding monster.
That'd be a great sleeper.
Get 1 mile to a gallon. You pull out the driveway. Hold on, gotta fill her up.
Yeah. I mean, it's more like 6, but yeah, basically.
So I was at work today, and one of the people
You tend to get fired if you don't show up.
Not necessarily. Anyways, so the girl I work with, she's about the same age as me. I think she's like a year and a half, 2 years older. Anyway, so she's like kind of into being healthy and stuff like that. So she busted out about a couple weeks ago, a container of elderberry gummy things. And so today she asked me if I wanted some, and they're not too bad. I was like, sure, why the hell not? And I mentioned to her, I said, I always think of Monty Python.
That was...
Every time, you know, you hand me these, and she, like, kind of looks at me all strange for a second. I said, you know, like Monty Python and the Holy Grail, the French guy throwing insults? She kind of stares at me and goes, I've never seen it. And I was kind of sitting there, and I'm, like, baffled, because not only is she... Does she watch a lot of comedy coming out?
You want the quote?
No, I know the quote. Your father smells like elderberries.
There's more to it.
I know there's a shit ton to it.
We all know the goddamn quote. We're not going to sit here and quote Monty Python for the next half an hour, because that is exactly what will happen.
Yeah, that's exactly. Anyways, but I was sitting here, and I just kind of was thinking about it. I'm like, okay, well, she is really into comedy. She just went to a stand-up comedy show recently by a comedian who is nicknamed The Machine.
Oh, yeah, Bert.
Yeah.
Bert Kreischer.
Yeah, so she just went to that, and...
I bet he was shirtless.
And I'm just sitting there, and I'm thinking, like, wait a second.
10 seconds.
You are completely in a comedy. She's always talking about the new comedy, whatever she's been watching, movie, television show on Netflix and everything. And she tries to get me to watch it. I'm thinking, like, how can you be that into comedy and not know about Monty Python and the Flying Circus?
So you said she's into comedy movies then?
Yeah.
Okay, because
she's into comedy movies, stand-up, TV shows, all that stuff, and she's usually talking about it at least once a day when I'm working with her.
Has she seen The Flying Circus?
No, she hasn't seen any. She does not know any Monty Python.
Okay, now I agree, because I'm super big into stand-up comedy, not a giant fan of comedy movies, TV shows, and et cetera, but if you're in all of it, how do you miss one of the most important
comedy groups?
Saturation, man. There's too much shit to keep track of.
Wait, hold on. She's as us.
The reason we got into Monty Python was because we had like a cool uncle or somebody that was slightly older than us, and maybe
not for me at all.
Yeah, I found that on my own.
Yeah, pretty much.
I remember Life of Brian was the first one I watched.
Well, I'm not the biggest Monty Python fan, but yeah, I ran into him. I actually ran into Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah, that's the most famous.
Because I was laughing at the fact that every time they showed the castle, it was the same side.
Yeah, yeah.
But my point is that somebody could grow up their entire life, born when we were born, you know, like the early '80s, and say that they've never seen it because it was slightly generation before them.
Yeah,
so unless you found it because you're like us and you just scoured the aisles for anything you hadn't seen, you had somebody to hit you to. You know,
here's where I disagree with you, because if you want to talk about that, I'd say that'd be true of the Marx Brothers, but not at Monty Python, because even when we were slightly older, it was everywhere. Anytime anybody talked about a comedy movie.
British.
Here's the thing. Well, even anytime anybody brought up a comedy movie, that even as a little kid, that was somewhere within the top 10 of the conversation. Oh, have you seen anything with Monty Python?
Well, see, I almost went on the question tangent with her of, okay, so what Mel Brooks movies have you seen? Have you seen, you know, like, did you somehow miss Blazing Saddles, See No Evil, Hear No Evil? Not necessarily Brooks one, but, you know, I mean, there's like a whole bunch of them that you're like, wait a second. But that's where my questioning would have gone. Have you seen this? Have you seen that? You know, just kind of going off on it. And I can almost guarantee she's at least seen Young Frankenstein.
Ugh.
I mean, not his best work, but I mean, and Spaceballs.
Whoa.
Young Frankenstein isn't his best work. It's up there, but it's at least top five. I wouldn't say it's number one.
I'll give you bottom five.
What's going above that?
Blazing Saddles, for Christ's sake.
Oh, man.
History of the World, Spaceballs.
History of the World would be an easy third for me to be.
Yeah, I'd say four.
It's got to be in the conversation because it's a great fucking movie.
And let's not forget Silent Movie.
To Be or Not to Be, the Silent Movie was great too. To Be or Not to Be was actually his most real movie.
By the way, I liked
the least sarcastic of them all.
Was that the one that we watched on Real Flicks Reviews?
Yeah.
I liked that a lot more than I liked Young Frankenstein.
Well, I mean, Young Frankenstein is at least top four for me. Blazing Saddles will always be top number one, no question for me.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, but we can go on and on about this. But you know what? Where this went in my head?
Blazing Saddles, Young Frankenstein, I think toss up, but it's just probably 50-50.
Yeah, I completely understand. But you know what? Where my mind went with this was, how much do I think that she would be laughing at them, trotting down the road with a pair of coconuts clocking together? Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, you know, that could not necessarily be her sense of humor, but there would be stuff in there that she would find probably amusing.
Well, because there was a mixture of like Keystone Cops, and there was some intelligent comedy. It's a chock full of different kind of breeds of comedy that fits within there.
It's British satire, man. So it's not something that, you know, like nerds used to talk about that shit. You didn't hear anybody but nerds talking about Monty Python when I was growing up.
Hey, geeks, you geeks, know, get it? Because we were, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, both. Still both on that one. But, you know, that was it's a real specific kind of satire. It's that Oxford, you know, university sort of satire.
Okay. But
what would be more of the American conversation would be like the National Lampoon. That was sort of our version with the Harvard crowd.
Well, National Lampoon. And then, I mean, if you really want to go obscure, you throw in Police Academy and all the Revenge of the Nerds films and any Rodney Dangerfield movie, you know, but
yeah, well, I mean, talking about like kind of the original,
okay,
sort of, yeah, Lampoon was,
but I was really thinking about it, you know, like I would say, like, you knowing you guys, you know, I've got a very dark sense of humor about 98% of the time.
You have a dark sense of humor? No, but would never have guessed that.
It really made me think, because I mean, like, I remember one of the fun times of going to the theater with John is we're going and watching Inglourious Basterds.
Hilarious movie.
And, you know, they're sitting there and unloading their guns into Hitler's, and I think it was Goring's face.
By the way, that's my number one comedy.
And they stop because they ran out of bullets, pull out the stick and magazine, reload it. I mean, I was busted up laughing, and John was too. But, you know, we were some of the few in the theater who were laughing because that shit's hilarious.
We were getting dirty looks because I remember halfway through the movie, like this, the bear juice scene where the guy hits him with the
baseball bat.
Yeah. I was crying practically, and I looked around, and everybody's looking and giving us strange looks. And it's like, this shit is funny. By the way, this is what happens when you're in a theater with James and I, is usually we're laughing at things that nobody else does, and then we realize, okay, we're too far into the rabbit hole on this. Yeah.
But I mean, that's something I wouldn't expect quite a few people to find hilarious. But, you know, I mean, that's where I'm like, I could tell her a shit ton of movies that she should watch that are comedies, but I'm like, I don't know. I don't think that many people have such a dark sense of humor, but I mean, like, that's quite a bit of Mel Brooks jokes, and his movies are pretty dark jokes.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of racist jokes. There's a lot of sexual jokes. There's a lot of, you know, hints at some pretty funny things, but, you know, I mean, that's his sense of humor. And there's some pretty, I wouldn't say raunchy things, but there's a lot of things that are,
Spaceballs,
you know,
there's a lot of
sexual in nature.
Yeah, I was going to say, the guy who played Willy Wonka.
Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder in Pryor's movies.
Oh, yeah.
I've always a giant fan of those two together.
Those two were amazing together.
My favorite one that I can name off the top of my head is the one where they went to prison. You know, and they were walking through the cell block going, me bad. You know, I forgot what it's called.
I don't know that one off the top of my head.
God, those two particular,
I'm always a big fan of Hear No Evil, See No Evil. Like that one is always hilarious to me. But, you know, I mean, yeah, so I just think it's strange that somebody who's in comedy doesn't really know much of Monty Python.
Stir Crazy, 1980.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay. All right.
I don't know if I ever saw that movie, actually.
Really? Oh, I loved it. Mainly because I was just such a sucker. When I was a kid, I saw one of Pryor's stand-up comedy specials, and it's the one where he's on like a wood stage. There's no background. It's not him on the Sunset Strip. I don't remember what it was. Mm-hmm. And then just started, it's like, oh, okay, now I know who he is, and I saw him in a movie. It's like, oh, hey, it's Willy Wonka, and just kind of went down the rabbit hole of his movies.
Richard Pryor wasn't Willy Wonka.
No, but you see Gene Wilder. It's like, okay, oh, okay. I see.
You see him in Willy Wonka.
Yeah, gotcha. It's like, okay, it's Gene Wilder and it's Richard Pryor. It's okay. Let's see. Because you got the wackiness.
See, I knew Gene Wilder from comedy before I saw Willy Wonka.
I see. Really? That was the first movie I remember seeing Gene Wilder in. And I remember thinking, okay, he's kind of creepy. Then you see the movie. It's like, okay, he's funny. And then when I saw him with Pryor, after I saw the special and some other stuff with Pryor, and it's like, okay, this is going to be interesting. And it was 100% right. It's like you have a very weird mix of different comedy styles that just mesh perfectly.
Mm. Yeah.
They must have been obnoxious off camera.
Oh, I bet.
Matter of fact, on camera, I bet they're obnoxious.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things that I think, and Ryan's pretty right on it, I've mentioned this to you guys to watch, but I don't know if you guys have ever looked into it. It's from 2004. John Gleese does a documentary called Wine for the Confused.
Nope, never seen it.
That thing is the funniest, like, documentary slash, you know, thing ever. And he really comes out and goes, you know, you can trust me about wine because I'm an actor. I'm a celebrity. We know lots of things about, like, prostate cancer, diabetes. He just starts listing all this shit that you see actors up there talking about. And they're like, it's a freaking great one. Ryan, I know I mentioned it to you a couple times. Have you seen that?
I don't know.
Wine for the Confused. It's with John Gleese. It's hilarious. But, you know, he comes away at the end with what his point is like, if you like it, drink it. Doesn't matter the price.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I think I do remember that. I remember that being the point of it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely recall.
So it's interesting.
But he does it in a comedy way that's, you know, very British humor.
I was trying to find it. There's an article. I saw an interview with him. I can't find an excerpt of it. It was basically talking about, you know, how modern comedy was. Because he was saying how Monty Python put everybody, modern comedy, to shame, which I kind of agree, especially if you look at, I guess, the way college is.
Yeah.
I agree and disagree. It just really depends on what your idea of comedy is. But just for the no holds barred comedy, I'd go for Monty Python versus kind of, if you're looking for a woke comedian, it's generally not funny.
Yeah. But, you know, I think when it comes to a sense of humor, I can't tell somebody what's funny and not.
I think his comment was the fact that comedy by itself is irreverent. I'm heavily paraphrasing. I may be wrong.
That's the thing, man, is that anybody who's commenting on the state of comedy right now, no one's real comedy is not like a state of something. It's people, you know, commenting on what they see, and that's differing opinions and saying shit just for the sake of being funny. You know, there is no, to me, current like culture, like, oh, this kind of comedy is funny now, and this is what people are accepting is funny. Like, it's so subjective that
it's
even though the person might have said naughty words, and it might not be for you, it might be for somebody else.
Except for Bob Saget.
Jeez.
Gilbert Godfrey.
Bob Saget's not for anybody. I would say that the only thing different, I think, about the modern world is it's so touchy. Like, within a couple of years, your stand-up bit can literally get you banned from television for the rest of your life and get everybody hating you.
Any comedian worrying about being funny does not give a shit about being banned from TV. They're worried about being comics.
See, this is where I kind of disagree with you, because even somebody like Seinfeld, there's a lot of famous comedians that basically say, we'll never step foot on a college again because of the way they are. So I think modern comedians are more aware of it than ever. And I think if you're a comedian,
don't do colleges.
I think if you're a comedian, I think you have to be somewhat worrisome of what's going to happen. Now, I'm not going to say that. I wouldn't say that that affect your comedy, but I think you got to be aware of. There's some topics that if you want to talk about, you got to realize at some point down the line, it may legitimately kill your career. I think you would be blind and not to.
What was it?
There's absolutely nothing that a comic could say. I'm case in point. Okay. Oh man, this is perfect timing. So just recently, and I don't think we brought it up on here, but a couple of weeks back, Kobe Bryant died in a helicopter accident, which I'm not breaking this news to anybody.
We talked about it. I'm pretty sure.
Everybody knew a half an hour later. Did we? I don't think we brought it up that much, or if at all.
I think we glanced over, kind of talked about it a little bit. I don't think we did a lot.
In any case, there's a comedian named Ari Shaffir. Okay.
Google him. Yeah, I saw that.
Pause this and Google Ari Shaffir, the three of you listening. Ari Shaffir, actually a friend of the aforementioned Bert Kreischer, the machine.
I still don't believe he tweeted that, by the way.
So he has a, not really a tendency, more of like a policy of trolling the recent dead, okay? Like somebody dies, tragedy and whatnot, this dude will be the first one to, you know, crack some fucked up joke about it, okay? When you Googled Ari Shaffir, you will see that on the day of Kobe Bryant's death, he put out a tweet and then subsequently a video, okay? The tweet was basically something to the effect of, I'm glad this rapist is dead. He should have died, you know, 20 years ago or whatever it was. Something, you know, horribly, horribly disrespectful to, you know, his friends, family, the world, you know what I mean?
He got a lot of hate for that.
And then gets a lot of hate for that, subsequently puts out a video where he fucking doubled down, like straight up said, oh, let me go ahead and clarify for those people who didn't understand what I was doing here. Fuck this guy. Like, I mean, went off, okay? Now, anybody in his peer group or comedians or things like this absolutely know that this was not in an attempt to you know, actually besmirch or, you know, or drag through the mud the name of Kobe Bryant. It was literally him trolling people on purpose, saying something terribly horrible. Now, there's nobody that's going to agree that was a good thing to say. Matter of fact, even his friends were like, whoa, bro, like, holy shit. That's incredibly harsh. He has not lost one gig, despite the amount of people that are, you know, asking for his shit to be, you know, pulled off. As far as I'm concerned, his deal with Netflix is still good for his upcoming special.
But here's
that he's putting out. I think it was Netflix.
Yeah, I still.
There will not be one bit of a reprimand for him doing that. And that's the most horrible thing I can think of a comedian doing in any kind of recent history at all.
But that was still pretty safe, though. If that happened during the Me Too movement, for example, his career would have been finished. He'd be working at McDonald's the next week.
There's a thousand comedians that were blasting the shit out of the Me Too movement.
Yes.
They're not worried about playing college campuses.
No, but what I'm saying is because of who Ari Shaffir is fairly up there, I guarantee that if he had done it during the Me Too movement, he wouldn't have survived. So that's all I'm saying. Like, he's no Hannibal.
No, he absolutely would have.
I don't think he would have.
He absolutely would have. It's because it's comedy. You can't police what people say, even if it's horrible. Here's the thing is that people think that comedy is living on TV and in Netflix. It's in the comedy club.
Okay, hang on.
They're in the room where you're in the room with people, and they don't give a shit.
Yeah, case in point, I mean, if comedy was governed by inappropriate boundaries, let's say that society doesn't like people joking about black people or Jews or, you know, whatever it could be, I mean, anything. If that was the governing factor of saying you're not going to be able to do that, then for one, Howard Stern would not have a show still. For two, I'm not done. Mel Brooks would be stripped down the street and beaten for the jokes he's made.
Yeah. The difference is Mel Brooks is he's not, you know, he's Just for one, it's a different era. But all I'm saying,
no.
Yes,
I'm not doing the different era thing. No,
you can.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. You no, 100% does. You
no,
can
it
get
doesn't.
If you made some of the jokes that he did in a modern movie, for example, Robert Downey Jr. is starting to have issues now because of the role he did in Tropic Thunder.
That, yeah, but I mean, that's so, what I'm saying is that even
is
though
okay,
he did
starting
it,
to have issues. What issues is he having? You know, it's some people arguing on the internet that it wasn't cool or it was appropriating. Nobody gives a shit about the nine people in a fucking comment.
See, I follow this a little bit closer than you do. There were some pretty people up there, high up there. Now, I don't think he gives a shit personally, but I think...
Yeah, what are we going to do?
It could easily affect his movie career.
Rolls over. I mean, fucking wouldn't.
Okay, well, we do have Rosie.
But
Roseanne...
There's,
I mean,
the only thing, excuse me, I do think it would. Now, would he stop being a stand-up comedian? No, but what I'm saying is it may affect the level of comedy gigs he can get. If a guy's remotely controversial, hold on. If a guy's remotely controversial, maybe he wouldn't get a high-paying gig. Maybe he'd end up being like, you know, being the headliner in Yuck Yucks in Canada versus being in the Comedy Store in L.A. No, maybe
okay,
not.
Apparently you don't know much about the Comedy Store.
All I'm saying, well, no, they actually do, like Joe Rogan gets paid to do there. There's a lot of comedians that actually get paid to actually go to the Comedy Store.
That's my point, and they're all fucking savages. There's not one person there that would say something politically correct to save his fucking life.
Yeah, Joe, if you listen like the Joe Rogan show, Joe Rogan knows what line he can't talk about. You can tell.
We're not talking about Joe Rogan.
Well, no, all I'm saying is...
We're talking about Ari Shaffir there constantly, Joey Diaz, Ron White, you know, all these cats that are not losing any money because they're being controversial. Joey Diaz is the least Me Too person of all fucking time. He's probably one of their highest paid comedians.
Yeah, all I'm saying is I think nowadays you have to be at least somewhat careful of what you say. I don't think as a, you know...
Not
as
a comedy club.
Well, comedy clubs, I think, in somewhat are different unless it's like a major, if it's attached to something. If it's like the Comedy Store, I think you're fine. But if it's like the Comedy Store and the Mirage Hotel, I guarantee the Mirage Hotel heads are like, yeah, this guy's not going. Well, he was tonight. No, he's not there.
Okay, but still, I think that...
I think you have to be careful of... I basically think you have to be... There's a level you have to be careful with. I don't think you can toe a certain line.
I think you're right when it comes to the college thing, for sure. Like, you know, there's a bunch of, you know, weird youths out there that are, you know,
okay,
just up each other's ass for regulating morality and whatnot. But
I'm going to put this one out there.
Go back.
I think that a comedian's bread and butter is knowing his audience. If you're a good comedian, you can get up and say anything you want as long as the audience is receptive to it. So if you don't know your audience and you get up there and you make a completely racist joke, like Michael Richards, let's bring that guy in.
He said the N-word a lot, didn't he?
He did. To an audience of black people. They're not all black, but there was quite a few. And... Of course that's not going to be receptive. First of all, he's a white guy doing it. Second of all, he didn't listen to his audience. And he obviously didn't know his audience.
No, I mean...
Now, it was at a heckler. But, you know, I think even... let's bring up Mel Brooks. I think Mel Brooks making the jokes he did in his movies, he picked the right person to deliver the line.
I also
now, that's,
you are absolutely correct.
Now
it's
I'm
also
bring,
a product
hold
of
on.
It's also a product of its time, which you cannot forget.
Yes,
yeah,
but he was very careful in who he had tell the joke.
Oh, 100%.
And put it in there. Now
and a lot of it's about intent. You know what I mean? People can read like, oh, this guy's a good person. I know where he's. And it's the reason that I'm not up Ari Shaffir's ass is because I've heard this guy so many years now. I know where he's coming from. I know he's being an asshole on purpose.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still fucked up. There's no way I'm going to try to defend him, but I don't hate him because of it.
I'm even going to throw in now one of the greatest comedians that we have of our time and going on. He still has a good career. Dave Chappelle. You know how many inappropriate jokes he tells in 5 minutes of being on stage?
In his current three Netflix specials, no less.
Yeah.
He got a ton of shit for some of those jokes.
He gets a ton of shit, but they were all dumb hippie bullshit.
Right.
Who don't know him. But if you look at the audience that he's talking to, all of them are dying laughing. There's people out there laughing so hard that tears streaming down their face.
100%. He made a trans joke in one of his stand-up specials and got a hell of a lot of heat for it.
And I know what joke it was. It was hilarious.
But the most amazing thing is, I don't know where I heard this from. It might have come from Joe Rogan. I wish I remembered exactly. But he said there was a trans woman in the audience that said, hey, that was the most affirming thing I've ever heard is because you're making fun of what I am. So, but all I'm saying is it's... Part of it, I guess what I'm saying is it's not necessarily your audience you have to be careful for. It's everybody else outside of it. Because your audience would think it's funny, but it's that one jackass that, for example, there's...
You can't give a shit about that one jackass.
Hey, time out. Let me finish. There's a radio show in Sacramento that is still on air, but because there was a guy who records every episode, and if there was anything even remotely towing a line, he would send it in, and they've come close at least three times from losing their broadcast license because of this guy.
Okay.
So all I'm saying is would you let me finish? You're not. All I'm saying is there is a line in comedy you have to toe, and it definitely depends on the
huge.
Well, hold on, dude. Hey, I'm going to mute you. So all I'm saying is, for one, I'm adjusting. What I'm saying is the media you use, you have to be careful. An audience in a room, you're generally fine with it, unless you're Michael Richards. Is it a comedy special, a stand-up? You may have to adjust it depending. All I'm saying is you have to be situational aware to some degree. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, I think that James is right in as much as you have to know your audience and what's funny is funny, and somebody can say a really fucked up joke and make it funny. You know what I mean? It's the singer, not the song, as they say. With radio, anytime there's advertising being sold, television, you know, radio, those sorts of things, you're beholden, one, to the radio for the FCC. That's the governing body of you can't do this on the radio. But then also you have your advertisers. So you can't bash your advertisers and say all these sorts of things. There's lines you have to walk. It's Coca-Cola's, you know, your sponsor. But in a comedy club, it's about drinks. You know what I mean? Are people buying my liquor? That's the only thing they care about at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think there's
what they make from the gate, from the door, is not going to be nearly as much as they make from the two drink minimum.
That's it. There's a minimum. That's what I was trying to remember what it was called.
But those people have a different priority set. And the three people that are pissed off, one, it creates that buzz. It's controversial, and it gets more people to want to go see what the fucked up thing is. Oh, something fucked up happened in that room. I want to go see what it is.
That's true.
That's me, you know? Like, somebody's something. Like, if I see a woman running out of a building, clutching her pearls, and yelling, like, the indecency, I'm running immediately into that room.
Well, here's my question is, how many people are like you and me? And this is a legitimate question. How many people, we're going to, like, they're clutching their pearls? Because nowadays, instead of being what would stereotypically be as the conservatives, you have... Which, if you know, the conservative audience, it's really easy. You know what you can and can't say, but it's this audience that just know left leaning that their sacred cows are not traditional.
Well,
so I that's, you know,
I think the biggest problem with these prudes, as we should call them,
that
they are not able to laugh at themselves, and that's a personal problem. That has nothing to do with comedy.
And they get offended on behalf of somebody else, which is, to me, recreational.
I fucking hate that with a thousand burning suns. If you get in mad on somebody else's behalf, you better have a letter. I want some evidence that person you're getting angry at actually gives a shit. From my experience, they fucking don't.
Right, John, you can't say that type of thing.
Why?
You know how pissed off the Mayans are going to be when they find out?
Well, hey,
we're gonna take you out and sacrifice you to the god.
Well, luckily I'm a little heavier armed than they were.
I mean, but that's the thing is like the now. Let's just do this, and I'm going to start with this group, and Ryan will totally get the joke of where I'm coming from. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you should be able to make fun of anybody you want, and The Simpsons did it. South Park came along, and they couldn't make certain jokes because The Simpsons did it already. Now, that's what I find so hilarious is the fact that, you know, there's lots of jokes in The Simpsons that touched on every person, age, young, woman, female, trans, gay, whatever. They made a joke about that person. Now, I know that there was a lot of people that were always with the whole thing of The Simpsons are terrible and all this crap, you know, but as I said, you need to be able to laugh at yourself. Do you know how many jokes were made about James L. Brooks, Matt Groening, and Sam Simon?
No clue.
Lots. And that wasn't just the creators of the show doing that. That was the writers and the comedians and even the voice actors.
Yeah, it was never a giant
Simpsons.
How many
jokes they made about Fox?
Oh, yeah, that too. I mean, that's astronomical.
Well, they were laughing all the way to the bank.
But,
it's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
If I guarantee that if Simpsons didn't make any money, they would have Fireflied that thing in a heartbeat.
Yeah, but if they weren't funny, they would have Fireflied them in a heartbeat, too. They wouldn't have lasted as long.
Which is exactly why there's no amount of letters that Comedy Central can get to ever pull South Park off the air.
No, I guarantee if Simpsons were funny but weren't making any money, they would go. Funny for a network does not make money. It has.
Of course.
But there's a slim chance of it being funny and people being aware of it and then not watching it. So it's always going to make money.
Yeah, I guess I said that wrong. I guess basically, you know, all because it's funny, if it doesn't hit an audience, it won't stay on long. Because there's plenty of stuff that was good but just never found an audience, so it didn't stay around, well, even though it was good.
Oh, exactly. Oh, dude, I want there to be a fucking whole channel just dedicated to dead pilots. Pilots being the first episode of a show made to try to sell to a network, not aviation.
Dude, there's a ton of there's a TV show that I remember as a kid that basically, if I ever find this fucking thing again, I'll send it to you, James. Basically, the premise of this thing was this guy belonged to the secret cult, and they were ninjas, and he or something like that. It was a secret society, and he got out of it, wanted to be left alone. And he was this kung fu action guy, and it was amazingly well-written story for as cheesy as it sounds, and it never made it's just like, because I remember shit like that. There were a lot of amazing stuff that just never, Earth 2.
The ones that were never aired, you know, because I've heard like these legendary pairings before of like, you know, Gene Hackman in some sitcom with, you know, like some other person kind of kid.
Oh, huh.
And you're like, wait, those two people were in a comedy or in a show together, and people you would never expect to be together, you know, let alone in like some specific sitcom they were doing or something like that. I want to see all of those.
See I'm kind of talking about like shows that didn't make it past the first season. Look up Earth 2. It's probably cheesy now, but back in the day, it was an amazing piece of sci-fi. I was really pissed.
I was going to say Sledgehammer, but that had 2 seasons.
Yeah, I was almost going to mention Sledgehammer, but yeah, like you said, it made 2 seasons. And I think it was perfectly ran because of the end of it. I mean, there could have been more seasons. They did leave it open for that.
I don't think it would have been as good. I think it would have gotten bad, I think, at the third season.
Yeah. I mean, if you people don't know what Sledgehammer is, go look it up. TV show.
Go look it up. Hilarious.
I don't think John or Ryan knew about it before they met me.
No, yeah, and I think I binged like the whole season in like a night.
Yeah, it's a freaking great show.
But luckily nowadays with the stuff that you know, Firefly, for example, you know, the show that was on and then off in like a season.
Yeah.
And it never had any kind of closure. They ended up making a movie about it. So like the fans literally brought it back. They brought back Star Trek. They brought back Deadwood for a movie because that never finished. I mean, that was literally due to people saying like, hey, we never got resolution on that.
So how was that?
And that's the studio recognizing that dude was good. The movie was great.
Because I've heard more people pan it, so I'm glad it was good.
Mm. Nah, you know what? It here's what it is, man. It's a bow. It's a nice fucking bow on everything. It basically takes place 10 years after the last episode, and everybody kind of coming back into town because it's becoming like a state or like an actual city or something.
Yeah,
city.
Okay, so pretty much and, what the Firefly movie did. It finished off everything to a reasonable conclusion.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was it resolved it. It just left you with this okay, it's over feeling, you know, which is exactly the opposite of what you got from whatever was it, 3 seasons, I think.
You know, I think you got a thing right there is that I mean, there are so many TV shows that don't wrap things up nicely. They really don't. I think if I want to bring it out, like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, I think that last season did a great job at ending that show.
The last season of the first series of the Roseanne show was a horrible way to wrap up the show. Because basically Dan died and she won the lottery and it was all an illusion. It was a really weird way to end a kind of an amazing show for the era.
Yeah, I also want to bring up another one because John sent Ryan and I a little snippet of the show. Justified ended pretty nicely.
Yeah,
that was a good ending for that one. And I mean, the worst one recently over the years, Dexter. That was a terrible ending to Dexter.
See, I thought they ended it so that
they literally blew it in the last season. I mean, just that whole last season can go fucking kick rock.
I would
like to respectfully submit for a great ending the 1990 sitcom Dinosaurs.
Oh yeah.
Because that show literally ended with the fucking dinosaur apocalypse.
Yeah.
See, I thought the way Dexter, now I haven't seen the last season, but from everything I've read, I thought the way they set up was to set it up to finish it off with a movie.
Yeah, but the way they set it up was absolutely terrible.
Oh, so
and that's why I'm pretty set on the fact that that's why they never put the movie out. Because it's been what, seven years?
All of those endings are baseball to the search for more money.
Yeah, exactly. But isn't
that a joke, though? I mean, it's just like the Buckaroo Banzai sequel that allegedly supposed to come out. Because they said at the end of the movie.
History of the World Part 2 that I've been waiting for 30 years.
And let's not forget Nazis on Ice.
Come on, man.
So, because I was
Jews in space. Come on, man.
There was a Druish princess.
Funny, she didn't look Druish.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Right there.
I'm not. I'm glad you got that.
That's why I didn't say anything. I'm not going there.
Anyways, but I would like. Yeah, I think that they need to be. And maybe it's the writers aren't getting enough money and they're just like, okay, well, you're ending this job for me, so fuck you. I'm not giving you a good ending. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but there are a ton of shows.
Maybe it is that sort of like sly way of like, hey, if we write some, you know, like half-assed cliffhanger in here, maybe they'll call us in 5 years and want us to do, you know, the special or the movie or whatever. You know, maybe it's that clever writer's trick of maybe I can bleed some more money out of this in the decade.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that could be it because, I mean, some of the plots on the ends of things, I'm just like, what were you doing there? You know, I mean, that's really what I think sometimes. I
know everybody hates it, but I love the Sopranos ending.
Oh, I did too. I liked it.
Well, it's amazing how controversial that is. I was always amazed, like how even today you hear people on the radio go, I hate that ending.
What were they expecting? It was great. Because here's the thing is, how do you put a bow on that show?
Yeah.
After everything that happened, how do you tie everything up and resolve it the way everybody wants? To me, the anxiety that you're left with, sitting there like watching that end scene and just being left with that, was perfect.
My actually favorite thing about Sopranos is I watched a clip recently. It was a guy who was a former capo for one of the New York crime bosses. It was Michael Franzini, something like that. And there's a part of the TV show where he's talking to, the main guy's talking to a shrink and he says, yeah, that would never happen. The person says, what would happen? Good chance it would have both ended up in the river type of thing. It said, the moment somebody hears that the head of the family is talking to a shrink, they're dead. And that was like, that was the coolest thing, because you had a legitimate former mob captain who made a shit ton of money actually say what was wrong with the show. That was my favorite part of that, because he's like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Well, it is the reason that he tried to keep it hidden for a long-ass time.
Yeah.
Look up that guy. I forgot it. I forgot the guy's name. I wish I remembered. But he's been on a ton of stuff. But he has some pretty amazing talks about the mob and how he got into it, because his father was a mobster, and he was making like $8 million a year in a tax scam in New York. And
shit.
Super interesting conversation. So if you guys want to see something interesting into like the real life of a true mobster, look him up. It's Michael Franzini, Michael something. It's super fascinating.
Franzini does sound familiar. Somebody I've heard, but I don't know.
It sounds Italian enough to be right.
Franzini just really sounds familiar. It sounds like somebody that I've heard talked about. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've looked in any of the mob stuff.
I find the mob... God, I gotta stop coughing. I find the mob stuff fascinating because it's... For one, growing up around here, if there was a mob in Placerville, it would be hilarious, because they would be broke. So it's so outside of my worldview and purview. I find it a fascinating lifestyle, just hearing people talk about and the taboos and things you can't do, and it's super interesting to me.
I just thought of another ending that was highly controversial too. I don't know where Ryan sits on this one. I'm not sure where Amber sits on this one either. The end of Game of Thrones. Every person that I've talked to that has actually read the books doesn't hate the ending. Everybody that I know just watched the show but never read the books hate the ending.
A lot of the stuff I've heard
I definitely don't hate it.
Can I add something?
But I thought it was rushed.
That's going to say that everybody I've heard has always said they should have made at least another half a season. That's what I've heard. Yeah. is they wanted it. Everybody I've heard says the problem with it is the buildup, as it went from A to Z so fast that if people felt like they just sped up too much.
I think the last four episodes were very, very rushed, but I think what they did with the ending, as far as the storyline goes, the plot of everything, I think that was fine. I think the reason why
plot-wise, fine.
The reason why they didn't have more of it to draw out is because Martin didn't finish the goddamn book. He just gave him notes.
But you think they could have because they've used so much license to begin with. You think they could have filled in the detail with Martin-esque? Because nobody knows.
The thing about it is that it takes Martin about 10 years to finish one of those books.
Oh, shit.
So, I mean, that's just looking at the copyrights on each book. Is there's like 10-year gaps in between them. And I think that's why it was so rushed, is because Martin obviously takes his goddamn sweet time and does anything else but fucking finishing the goddamn book.
I mean, look how long it took now, Tolkien. So.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that, you know, if it's going to be as good as the other books, I want him to do it right. I don't want him to fuck around and mess it all up.
I did hear that he's changing the end of the book.
Oh, no, it won't be the same as the show.
No, I heard he's changing it because of the ending of the show. I don't know if that's true, but that's why I recently ran across that.
We'll find out. But anyways, but there are so many people that were like up in arms about it and were all so mad about it. I'm like, I mean, they even told you in the middle of the seasons is that, you know, the when the gods give birth to a Targaryen, they flip a coin. One side is sane, the other side is a maniac. So that's kind of where it goes, but... You know, I don't think the ending was terrible. I think it was a little bit rushed. I think they could have done at least four more episodes and make it a little bit better. But
Jon Snow was the good flip? Because wasn't he?
That's to be determined.
So I have heard, and I never know how much is true, especially with fucking Hollywood, that allegedly they're going to make they're definitely making prequels, and I've heard allegedly they may make... a sequel to it. Is this something you guys would be interested in, or do you think, hey, this is a move on?
I think the way I look at it is there's only a certain parts of that world that I'm actually interested in. The rest can just whatever. I don't give a shit.
I'm interested in the little girl. That's it. She's the only one that fascinates me because she's so...
Well, that would be a sequel. That wouldn't be a prequel.
I would love... story-wise, I think she's the most interesting just because I think she's the one that's like the most deadly. And I don't know. I just think she's the most different character. I think she's for what I've seen. And by the way, this is very limited. I think she's the most, she's a character that's completely different than how she started.
I think the storylines I'd be interested is a Shy by the
Sea. I definitely want to see what the Westeros.
Yeah. Yeah. A Shy by the Sea. I'm interested in that. That's where the Red Priestess and a lot of the dark magic comes from. And Valyria up to the Doom.
So,
yeah,
Christopher Tolkien just passed away last year or sometime in January. He was basically the keeper at the gates, and we had a conversation about this a while ago. He was the one that hated Peter Jackson for what Peter Jackson did, and I don't remember specifically what about Peter Jackson's vision he hated. I certainly know I have my complaints. So here's my question. Now that in theory the keeper at the gates of Dawn is dead, would you be interested in more content, especially with Silmarillion, or is this a universe that you think, okay, we've seen enough? There's been, I don't know how the fuck you turn a small book into 9 hours worth of movie, but there's already been enough content. Would you be interested in it?
I'd at least check it out.
To me, I don't know. I like the idea that Christopher Tolkien was not gatekeeping, you know what I mean? Not saying like no one's ever going to do this right, but being critical of what's being put out there.
Oh, he was gatekeeping because he basically said Peter Jackson will never be able to do it ever again. He was gatekeeping. And by the way, I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
That's the thing. I don't agree with that, but I agree with the sentiment that he's looking after the legacy. And just kind of letting it go the way of whatever. Hey, now it's a free-for-all. Everybody grab your piece of Tolkien.
And I got to give Christopher Tolkien credit for that just because he loved his dad so much and the vision and the universe. Like, I'm not crapping on it at all. I mean, I'm a giant fan of that universe, but I'm kind of wondering because Amazon is allegedly spending a fortune making their own version of it, like a TV show of it, allegedly. Mm.
So like it's the same story or like a different part?
I think it's the Lord of the Rings, but it's been a while since I've read it, but I think if it's a TV show, you can go in a lot more detail. Like Tom Bombadil's definitely going to be there. The Barrow Downs are going to be there. There's a lot in that universe, if you've actually read the books, that the movie doesn't even remotely touch.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of interested to see how that really plays off.
I don't know. I think if they're going to do it, Hollywood's going to search for a sure thing.
But see, this is Amazon, though. I mean, if you can talk about as far as Amazon. First, Hollywood, I think you can go in this old Maryland. There's a ton of amazing stories.
I just mean just in general, they'll want a sure thing before. But I think Amazon does it right. They put out a pilot or, you know, just a couple episodes and see what the, how much they get.
The thing is, they've got a precedent set between, you know, the movies, which are, you know, all these historical, you know, sorts of things, Outlander. I mean, every channel's got their medieval sort of thing. You know, Game of Thrones really let everybody know, like, hey, the time is right for this shit.
So here, so there's
more sword and sorcery going on.
So this is from Deadline.com, and it's an older article, so forgive me. In the quest to launch a hit fantasy series, a hit fantasy series of the Game of the Thrones caliber, Amazon has closed a massive deal said to close to $250 million to acquire a global TV rights to Lord of the Rings based on the fantasy novel by J.R.R. Tolkien. Streaming service has given multiple season commitments to Lord of the Rings series in the pact, which also includes potential spin-off series. The original series, a prequel to Tolkien Lord of the Rings, will be produced by Amazon Studios, cooperative with Tolkien Estate and Trust, HarperCollins, and New Line Cinema, a division of Warner Brothers. So, yeah. Wow, $250, that's a hell of a deal. So, I don't know, I want to see it, but also allegedly Amazon's making a Willow TV show. Which...
Really?
I'm interested...
Making a what TV show?
A Willow?
Oh. Huh.
So I don't know. Amazon seems to be doing some things lately that's kind of scratching me where I'm itching, you know, because I'm a huge sword and sorcery fan. For some reason, Game of Thrones didn't really do it to me later on. Like, some of the episodes later on I thought were cool, but didn't really scratch my sword and sorcery itch. I'm kind of on a new universe. I mean, this is just me personally. I love Lord of the Rings. Maybe do something off of, like, the Forgotten Realms universe. Because there's a ton of stuff on there. Like, if you talk about Drizzt, there's the Cleric Quintet, which is an interesting, it's like four novels, which is an interesting story.
Amazon, I think, is going to be doing the Wheel of Time series.
Yeah, I've had so many people tell me to read those books. I haven't done it yet.
Oh man, I wish Jeff was alive.
Yeah, I got a coworker who's reading them, and he's been preaching them for a fucking while now. I'm reading currently
That's a damn good question. What's it called?
Well, here thinking of that, our rest in peace, Jeff Michael, our beloved co-host who passed away, was absolutely madly in love with the Wheel of Time series. And he always tried to get me to read it. And I've read half of the first book. So I'm super curious on where that goes.
Jeff was one of the many people who's told me to read those, and I just hadn't gotten around to it.
I've never heard about it until he has. Honestly, I'm super picky, so reading stuff for me, it's really hard to get into.
Yeah,
what
I'm reading now, it's called the First Law Trilogy. First one's called The Blade Itself by Joe Abercrombie. It's fucking good.
First Law. God, that sounds so familiar. Is that?
Been around for a little while.
Was that about it? Was there a TV show about that?
Not that I'm aware.
First Law, is that the first?
The First Law. The First Law Trilogy is the trilogy. The Blade Itself is the first book.
This is exciting, but God, it sounds so familiar. It's, what's the character called? Is that character called?
Well, there's a.
Is there some sort of like sword of truth or something like that? Because I swear.
Not so far.
I swear I've. Oh, the blade itself. Okay, yeah, this is about Lungren Ninefingers. Yeah, I've actually listened to the first book.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. That was
an odd. It was really cool, but it was this was a. It's an interesting book.
I hadn't heard.
Yeah, it is. I've enjoyed it.
I ran into the audiobook. I have it somewhere.
Yeah, but you don't technically read; you just listen.
I don't have time. So reading, listening to things is easier for me.
You can read in the car.
Oh shit! Half the people who I drive, who are passing me on the freeway, are reading in the car and somehow don't die. I completely forgot about that book until you mentioned that. Damn. Oh, the other one.
My coworker is wicked into all the high fantasy, so I tend to get into a lot of conversations about it.
Oh, the other book, the other one you should look into is The Warded Man. You might like that. It's a lot of supposition, like the first book is setting up the characters, but it's pretty badass how it goes into. So to spoil it a little bit, like everybody locks themselves in their homes at night. And basically what happens is these symbols you put on your home or wherever you protect you to stop these demons or whatever from breaking your house. It involves the story around that. And it's actually pretty cool. I'll send you guys a link if I can find the information about it. Anybody have anything to say? Because for once, we might actually close not 10 minutes over.
No, I'm pretty good.
Yep, I'm good.
Oh, watch Marble Olympics.
Yes, watch the Marble Olympics, also known as the Marble League these days, because now they're going to have like advertising and stuff because they're big now. Get on the betting. It's a good time had by all.
I tried to get my little boy into it, and he wasn't into it.
Just get your wife into it.
So and instead, I have a favor to ask. If there's, for some reason, somebody from Amazon, yada, yada, listening, do me a favor. Can you put fucking Wacky Races on so I can actually show my son? He's mildly interested, so I'd love to see if it's something he would be into, since it's fucking from the 60s.
I thought they had a couple of the Wacky Races on Disney.
Really? I'll have to find it, because I've been searching for it and couldn't find it fucking anywhere. I found a couple of clips on...
Do you have Disney YouTube. Plus?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have it for a year for free because of Verizon.
Yeah, if you go to, you can do a search by decade, which is actually a really cool feature. I'm pretty sure it's in like the 60s or 70s category, possibly the 80s.
My favorite.
But you can just search through them, and it has all the stuff that's not really listed on their main page.
I'll have to take a look. Also, my favorite thing about Disney Plus is because Disney's so old, it goes from racist to woke, in five easy searches. So it got me laughing pretty hard when you were watching certain things.
Oh, well.
So for the California pariah, for the fat man, and for Ryan, Preston, thank you for listening.
Goodbye.